Wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
3 minutes, please, Your Honor.
3 minutes, you have it. You may begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Heath Saban, I'm here on behalf of Joey Eugene Hodnett. The trial court did err in granting denying the appellant's motion to suppress.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Suppress what? What evidence are you seeking to suppress?
Your Honor, I would tend to agree that the way this got framed was probably a little bit murky. The four corners of the actual motion was the actual stop itself.
That's not evidence.
No. The argument before the trial court was the actual, whether or not the tag was valid.
I understand.
The distance that...
But what would the trial court have suppressed?
The trial court would have suppressed the actual, whether or not the officer had reasonable articulable suspicion to even stop the vehicle and even go any further upon.
That's the basis for the suppression.
What evidence,
you know, drugs, guns, money, what evidence did you seek to keep from the trier of fact?
The evidence itself would have been ultimately his identification and then his establishment as a habitual offender.
Right. In INS versus Lopez Medina's U.S. Supreme Court case 1984, the body or identity of a defendant or a respondent in a criminal case proceeding is never itself suppressible as a fruit of an unlawful arrest, even if it is conceded that an unlawful arrest, search, or interrogation occurred. Where does that leave you?
Your Honor, it may leave me in a somewhat tenuous position. However, what we're dealing with here is it may not be 100% clear. However, what we have is he's a habitual offender. Well, that's what it was established. Trying to prevent the actual stop itself, but for the stop, he would never have been adjudicated or been declared for the purposes of a second or subsequent offense a habitual offender.
Let's take the stop itself in terms of how the error is framed. The error is framed differently than it's argued. I mean, it's argued as essentially that the reasonable articulable suspicion evaporated once the stop occurred. Where is that preserved in the record?
Your Honor, it's preserved somewhat multiple different times as the trial counsel was arguing in front of the trial court. It started out as arguing as going up, I think, towards the end of his initial argument before the trial court. He indicated we would have seen the tag at 20 feet walking past or even going past it. The trial court posed the hypothetical
which was essentially disavowed by counsel.
Not necessarily disavowed, not directly answered by counsel.
But the
not
answer
adopted.
Was, yeah, it's unclear, I think,
yes,
the answer that was given.
It was.
So that would imply that it was not adopted.
Correct. It wasn't adopted, but that's where...
If the trial court raising it is not enough for us to conclude that was argued below, do you have anywhere else in the record where the continued detention, as opposed to the initial stop, was argued?
In all candor, Your Honor, no. It was the initial four corners of the motion was the investigatory stop, arguing whether or not the tag light or the temporary tag was actually valid. I mean, it was in fact, I mean, it was conceded that it was actually valid. But I mean, it all framed from there at what distance, that sort of stuff.
There was something unusual about the tag. The date wasn't where the date was supposed to be.
The expiration date, correct.
Why isn't it reasonable for the police officer to ask the driver, why is your tag different? Who wrote this date on here? Was this done by the dealer, or did you add it on there? What's wrong with that follow-up investigation?
Well, I think the Virginia Code is clear that as far as like a temporary tag is concerned, it is the dealer's responsibility to put on the expiration date. But even beyond that, the officer...
But this is a North Carolina tag, correct?
Correct.
Different requirements in reference to having the expiration date.
It may very well be, but once you pass into Virginia, I mean, the officer is not always 100% clear on what North Carolina law would be, but once it goes into effect into Virginia, the law of temporary tags was 30 days. The officer knew it was 30 days.
But the actual expiration date is not on this tag, if I understand the record it's extrapolating from the fact that the issuance date is there.
Yes.
And the North Carolina statute is crystal clear that the expiration date has to be on the tag for it to be valid and for it to be a validly issued North Carolina tag. So why can't the officer, why a Virginia officer cares a lot about whether the North Carolina tag was validly issued is an interesting question, but setting that aside, why can't the officer investigate because it is not a valid North Carolina tag, it was not properly issued? Whether he knows that or not is a different question, but we're here objectively, not subjectively.
Yes. Your Honor, respectfully, once he goes in, sees that it's not a valid, or there's no expiration date, and the purpose of the stop, as the Commonwealth indicated on brief, was to determine whether or not the tag was actually valid. That was his basis for the stop, was go investigate whether or not is this temporary tag still valid. Once he establishes that that tag was valid, it is off of the...
See, that's why I'm not understanding. You're jumping a fact there. You said once he established it's valid. He did not establish that it was valid. He established that it might be valid, but he still had a question because it didn't contain information it was required to contain.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I disagree. The officer conceded that for Virginia.
His subjective belief was that it was not an expired tag.
Yes.
Objectively, it does not contain information that North Carolina law required it to contain. Why isn't that something an officer can investigate objectively? Take the officer's subjective statement out of it because that's what we have to do.
Objectively, he could probably go up and determine whether or not and inquire as it relates to the actual tag itself, but that's once he goes a little bit further to, and again, the sole basis of the actual initial, is this tag valid? Going up, asking those particular questions may be potentially valid, but going anything further beyond that, if that is the sole basis for the looking at it objectively, looking at it, okay, why are these blocks filled in? He could potentially inquire as relates to that, but not go any further. That is the objective.
It's routine police practice that when you stop a car, the first thing you want to know is who you've stopped, if for no other reason to protect yourself against potential harm at that time or potential future litigation. Why is it unreasonable for him to say, sir, can I see your driver's license? What's your name?
In and of itself, and framing it very, very narrowly, nothing. Once he goes back and actually starts running the information, trying to determine anything further regarding that person, calling dispatch, running the information through to determine anything, that's where the problem is.
If he just said, sir, you're free to go, run the information, and chased him down and arrested him then.
No, there's no. Once he established the purpose of reasonable articulable suspicion is either to confirm or dispel whether or not any criminal activity is afoot. And once he made those objective questions, whether or not it was valid, but I think it was established that he acknowledged that after 30 days it was valid, it was still a valid North Carolina tag, so I think at that point in time, his reasonable articulable suspicion was dispelled.
Well, let me go back to my first inquiry, because this always troubles me. Suppose he asked the guy his name, and he goes back and he runs the name and finds out he's wanted for capital murder. What's the officer supposed to do? Let him go? Can he be prosecuted for capital murder because the outstanding warrant was determined during the course of an unlawful stop? I mean, what's the officer to do?
I think if ultimately the officer, I'm not necessarily faulting initially the officer's actions. I'm not necessarily doing that. I think the officer, if that would be the case, the officer can make the arrest, and that is obviously counsel and the appellate courts to determine the legality of what the officer did. But the officer's training may dictate him that he do that, whether or not legally and it was permissible is, I think, a separate question. Once the officer walking up indicated that it was dispelled, that pretty much is the end of the matter. Now, I understand that
you concede that as a matter of fact, the trial court found that the stop had to occur before we could even get to the officer's subjective belief that the plate was valid.
Yes.
Okay. How does that assuming it's preserved and assuming that's correct, the officer gets within 20 feet of the car and sees that the plate is valid. Is it your position then the officer just has to, without saying anything, get back into his car and drive off? I mean, he can't go up, knock on the window, tell the guy, I stopped you for this, you may go. He can't have, I mean, anything else is prolonging the stop.
No,
Once it's dispelled, what is the officer required to do? The normal police-citizen interaction would be to continue up, introduce yourself, ask your name and identity, and then explain why the stop occurred. But that would get us to a problem where you say it is prolonged and he's getting information he's not entitled to. How does the encounter end if you are correct? Or how is it supposed to end?
Your Honor, common courtesy indicating, like, yeah, I stopped you for this reason, I see it is valid, you're free to go, I think that is perfectly acceptable. If the officer also wanted to just go back, I think that would leave citizens wondering what went on, but I think it's perfectly acceptable to potentially go up, say, I stopped you for this reason, I see that it is still valid, you are now free to go. I think that's perfectly acceptable. And I don't think it necessarily prolongs the detention. Is not really being detained. It's stopping it. He's explaining why the stop was made and then indicating that it is no longer, and that person is now free to go. I think that is a perfectly acceptable ending point once the...
Well, what are we going to do with this case? Suppose we agree with you, say, well, yeah, the evidence of whatever this evidence is should be suppressed. What do we do at that point? Is he subject to prosecution because we now know that he's an habitual offender from information other than what was gained at the initial stop?
Judge, I'd be asking the court to essentially just reverse his conviction and overturn it. That's what I'm asking the court to do.
Well, if evidence was improperly admitted, then we reverse and remand, because the Commonwealth might be able to try the case without the tainted evidence. And, you know, the officer, now he goes down and he runs the record and he determines that the defendant is, in fact, an habitual offender. We're right back where we were. We're prosecuting for being an habitual offender.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I think it'd be potentially, if the Commonwealth wanted to do that it may be the Commonwealth's prerogative in order to do that. But they'd still have to establish, as Your Honor indicated, that they'd have to get it some other means that's not going to be
potentially
tainted. Well,
you said there was no problem with the officer determining his identity. What was unlawful was when the officer went back and ran that license to determine if there are any warrants outstanding.
Yes.
So, if we exclude the information that the officer received when he ran that license, what's wrong with allowing the officer to confirm the same information back at the station house right now?
Well, at that particular point, I mean, what would be the officer to have no basis to actually confirm or...
Except he knows. He does now know, and it's the problem with identity being the suppressible thing. That's the fruit of the poisonous tree, I would say on steroids, but I guess Miracle Grow is more appropriate. I mean, he can't unknow that this is who he saw driving the car.
Correct.
And he now knows all of the elements of the offense are present. He can prove them without, regardless of whether he runs them through dispatch today, is Judge Petty's point, because, well... Once he's got the identity, he's got everything he needs.
You know, I think Your Honor hit it. I mean, it is sort of like fruit of that poisonous tree. Once he establishes it, gets it off of that unlawful sort of stop, the investigatory detention, then I think everything else going back through would be fruit of that poisonous tree, no longer able to proceed under that particular theory. It'd have to go under and get the information under a non-objectionable
Mr. Saban, you're into your rebuttal, and we've asked you some last-second questions, so I'll put a minute or so back on the clock for you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Forster?
May it please the Court, Stephen Forster on behalf of the Commonwealth. I'd like to start. There's two points the Commonwealth wishes to make. First, that with respect to the evidence adduced at trial, Officer Lancaster certainly had reasonable suspicion to pull over the vehicle. To the extent that's the issue that opposing counsel wishes to raise, I would simply look to the record where he repeatedly testifies that he observed a North Carolina temporary license plate tag. He didn't see an expiration date. He initiated a traffic stop, at which point, sometime between the initiation point...
I think you got a concession that the stop was good.
Okay, Your Honor. I'll move forward. And moving to the second argument, the 5A12 and 5A18 failure to preserve this issue on appeal.
How do you find the 5A12 to be applicable in this particular case?
With respect to 5A12, Your Honor, the way that the assignment of error is phrased is only with respect to the vehicular stop. To the extent he wishes to argue that the reasonable suspicion dispelled, evaporated after the initial stop.
Isn't that better suited for the 5A18 as opposed to the 5A12?
I agree. I think 5A18 is stronger, but I believe that the Commonwealth's position is that 5A12 is equally applicable.
Well, 5A12 is a petition rule. It wasn't raised in the brief in opposition, and there may be somebody on this panel who has opined that that means that it's waived.
Then I will move to 5A18. So I believe Judge Petty asked the question where it was preserved in the record, and the issue is it's not. Clearly, the trial court on page 73 of the appendix was trying to clarify with counsel, are you asking me to rule on the reasonable suspicion for the stop, or are you asking me to rule on whether or not that reasonable suspicion was dispelled prior to obtaining license and registration? And counsel simply stated it's unclear.
And that was... perhaps not the best answer, but one of the purposes of 5A18 is to make sure the trial court is fully aware of all issues and therefore isn't committing error. Isn't the trial court's question an indication that he understood what the issue at least should have been?
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think what the trial court was trying to do is determine what the question before the court is. And with that response, I believe that the ruling of the trial court indicates what it understood the question to be. And on page 7...
it's not very fully developed in terms of what the basis of the denial was. So how are we to know that the court did, in fact, take into consideration that portion of what it put forth as what the appellant's argument would have been?
Well, in this particular instance, again, looking to the record, the court specifically states he rules that Officer Lancaster had reasonable articulable suspicion to initiate the stop, at which point if a defense counsel wanted to raise the issue of whether or not it was dispelled or evaporated, could have objected in the court and had said, Your Honor, I respect the court's ruling with respect to the initiation of the stop. But moving beyond that to the point in which Officer Lancaster determined that the license plate was valid, to the extent it is still not a valid license plate and the entire stop was justifiable, but with respect to what was put before the court, at that point he could have raised the issue and he didn't. And that would have been the point in time in which counsel could have made it very clear to the court what exactly he was ruling on or obtained a additional ruling such to preserve the issue for appeal. Again, going through the record, there's just everything that counsel discussed with the trial court was 20 feet, 30 feet, he couldn't see it, he could see it, but never did he make the argument that that Officer Lancaster, as he approached the vehicle, saw it, and at that point it was dispelled. And moving to Judge Russell's question to opposing counsel, what was the officer to do? I think there's a significant amount of case law.
You're kind of going the road I wanted to go. I'd like to hear the merits of this. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of case law as to what happens once the officer's reasonable suspicion is dispelled. What can he do at that point?
Yes, Your Honor. And I was unable to find anything specifically in Virginia that directly addressed these facts, but I did look outside of Virginia, and I would point the court to the case of U.S. versus Nolan, and that's 29 F3rd 558. It's out of the 10th Circuit, 1994 case, as well as Miller versus Parrish, and that's 2013 U.S. District Lexus 63162 at star 2122, and that's out of the Eastern District of Virginia in 2013. In both of those cases addressed a very similar fact pattern in which an officer stopped a vehicle for what they believed to either be no license plates or invalid tags. And as the court went through the analysis, it said, you know, an officer is more than entitled, once they discover that the tags are valid, to walk up and initiate a conversation to simply inform the driver as to the reason of the stop.
Can he ask him for his driver's license?
I believe at that point, Your Honor, again, the reasonable suspicion is dispelled, which he would have to have a subsequent justification for requesting identification.
And basically, the Tenth Circuit case, McSwain, Nolan is his middle name. You threw me there for a second.
Sorry, Your Honor.
Would hold that he had to let him go.
Yes, Your Honor. And
that's not the Commonwealth's position, is it?
Well, no, the Commonwealth's position is that this was never preserved. It's not properly before this court.
Right, but the question is, if we get to the merits, is the Commonwealth's position that McSwain is correctly decided and he had to let him go?
No, Your Honor. The Commonwealth's position is that because this wasn't preserved, we don't have a record to indicate what took place during that conversation. And if we look to the Miller versus Parrish case, the court there said, an officer who goes up to initiate a conversation to allow the driver to understand what the reason of the stop was for could develop another reasonable suspicion for some other reason. Could be a mud flap, could be an odor of marijuana coming from the vehicle. And in this particular instance, because this was never raised to the trial court, we don't have a record to indicate what happened after he discovered.
Well, wouldn't it be a fair statement that McSwain is quite different from this case, because McSwain involved an actual search of the vehicle for drugs and firearms, and so evidence was seized as a result of the extension of the detention. Here, nothing was seized from the defendant. No evidence was produced. The only thing we have is his identity and the officer subsequently learning that he was an habitual offender.
I would agree with the court, Your Honor, that it is distinguishable. And again, in that case, they went through and they did have a search and they did find evidence and that evidence was used. And again, I think if we look to Miller versus Parrish, that's a case where it just deals with the, you know, requesting identification. And what we get into there is case law that contemplates whether requesting identification can become, is it voluntary? Is it consensual? I mean, in this particular instance, it would be pure speculation, but perhaps Officer Lancaster walked up to the car, said, I'm very sorry, I pulled you over, I believed your tag was invalid, I see it's valid, you're completely free to leave, but if you don't mind, may I possibly run your identification? He says, sure, do we still have a consensual encounter? And I point the court to U.S. versus Lambert, that's 46 F3rd, 1064, 1068, again, out of the Tenth Circuit, and there the court distinguished a circumstance like that with, if there are lights flashing, is there a reasonable, you know, a reasonably objective basis that this is a consensual encounter, or is it no longer consensual? And so, again, we don't have a developed record to know what, if anything, took place between Officer Lancaster and the defendant at the point at which he walks up to the window to have this, you know, it could be a completely friendly and just a discussion with him as to why he's free to leave. So for that reason, the Commonwealth wouldn't concede wouldn't concede the case. It's certainly, with respect to keeping my credibility with the court, it does create a significant question of constitutional dimension. I do agree with that. But the Commonwealth would argue, first, there was reasonable suspicion for the stop, which I believe opposing counsel has conceded. And with respect to 5A18, that the issue was never preserved. The precise issue was never put before the trial court and never ruled on it.
Virginia has a statute, 46.2-104, that requires the operator of a motor vehicle to stop on the signal of a law enforcement officer and to show him his driver's license, et cetera, et cetera. Is there, assuming that the stop has to be lawful, has to be based on reasonable suspicion at a minimum, is there any constitutional prohibition against requiring the driver to then identify himself?
Your Honor, I can't say that I have a definitive answer for you at that point or right now.
Because if that statute is not unconstitutional, then it seems to me it might answer the question.
Well, Your Honor, I would look simply to, again, I found a case, Johnson versus Commonwealth, and that's 2000, Virginia App Lexus 170, which, again, discusses underneath the statute where you have to provide your identification. It says it can still be a consensual encounter, and to your point, I would say that requesting it wouldn't be unconstitutional. But again, if there are no further questions from the court, I will rely on my brief for any further argument.
Thank you. Mr. Stabenow, you got 2 minutes.
Yes, sir. Just a couple quick points. Obviously, I think the first question that needs to be raised and framed is properly whether or not we actually reached the merits of the, and whether or not this was preserved under 5A18. respectfully, I think whether it be with the trial court or even very limited what trial counsel did argue as it relates to whether or not it should have been dispelled once he was able to see it walking up, that sort of stuff, I think it was. It might not be the best preservation, but I believe it was preserved for the record for this court to actually read the merits of the actual case. Then the more, I guess, once that happens, what actually happens at that particular point in time? Judge Petty raised the assuming that the stop is lawful, asking for the identification. Well, again, that's the question. What was the stop initially lawful? Beyond that, if it is not lawful and the reasonable suspicion has been dispelled, it's not something that has been particularly... Right.
But I believe you've conceded that it wasn't dispelled until after the stop had occurred. Or at least that's the factual finding of the trial court that
you
stuck with.
Yes. The record gets to the point he initiated the stop at 30 feet, was not able to see as relates to the actual date of issuance at that distance. But before he got out of the vehicle, I think the record establishes he was at 20 feet, and at 20 feet he was able to see when the date of actual issuance, indicating that the tag itself was still valid under Virginia law.
But he's already been seized for our purposes at that point.
Yes, the stop has occurred at that point in time. So whether or not he's walking up or prior to the officer actually getting out of the vehicle, the suspicion had already been dispelled. Now, whether or not the officer is then permitted, like I said, going up, explaining the reason why, I don't think there's any particular issue with that, but then indicating that they're not free to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will greet counsel, and then we will conclude today's docket with comments.